You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jeffrey Archer has had two notable careers. He's the author of best-selling books like Cain and Abel and Honor Among Thieves, and he was the leader of Britain's Conservative Party until he was convicted of perjury in 2001. Since then, he spent 2 years in a London prison, written a play, and published his prison diaries to critical acclaim. And now Mr. Archer's written a new novel called False Impression. It's just out from St. Martin's Press, and I'm pleased to welcome Jeffrey Archer back to my show today.
Hello. Thank you, Leonard. Nice to be back.
Should we be surprised that your first novel since you were released from prison is a thriller packed with unsavory criminals?
In New York? No, the idea came from an article in the New York Times when I read after 9/11 that several people listed as missing presumed dead weren't actually missing presumed dead. They had, for matrimonial reasons or for financial reasons or for criminal reasons, disappeared off the face of the earth. And I thought it would be fascinating to take that idea and have a young lady who'd just been sacked because she's discovered her boss is a criminal and trying to steal a beautiful Van Gogh, that when she gets out of the tower and she gets home, she reads the next day that she is among those missing, presumed dead. And this gives her an opportunity to reverse what it's doing. But of course, the baddie, what you call the criminal, he discovers 48 hours later that she's still alive, and that's when the book takes off.
And we are talking about Romanians for some reason. We have, she's a Romanian, her boss, who doesn't have a Romanian name, is a Romanian, and the killer here is a hit woman who is a former Romania Olympics gymnastics champion. And I was wondering if I should worry the next time Olga Kolmanich is offered as a guest on the
well,
show.
Well, I guess that's where I got the idea. I chose, actually, if you say that, Leonard, I chose between three countries. I chose between Russia, which I thought was too obvious, been done many times before.
But you've said that the least expensive hitmen that are in prison are the Russians.
Yeah, they're very cheap. £5,000. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the rate is in the United States, but in Russia now, you can, at a low level, have anyone killed for $5,000. And for you can get up to a pretty high level for $20,000. I mean, it's just nowadays in Russia, and sadly in many of the Eastern countries, someone gets in your way, you simply kill them. You don't change the deal, or you just get rid of them. And it's very cheap.
Actually, I conflated two Olympic stars. It's Olga Korbut and Nadia Comaneci.
You're quite right.
But
quite right.
In either case, were you inspired by them?
Well, certainly saw both of them. All my love of sport over the many years. When I go to the Olympics, and I've been to six Olympics, I always see the track and field, of course, which I ran a little when I was a child, but always went to the gymnastics. And I guess that's when it got into my mind that I would like a villain who was only 5 foot, who was very, very tiny and looked like a gentle child, but actually was a killer and would cut your throat without a second look. I like the idea of coming away from a hitman who's clearly and obviously a strong, tough guy.
Well, they also have certain advantages. A gymnastics champion, a petite one, would be able to do things, fit in through spaces that the rest of us wouldn't be able
That's
to get
right.
to. Would have agility. The
in,
rest of us.
In and out. Could be, yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder about how you came up with this idea and this rather complicated plot. Is this the sort of thing that you'd work out to keep yourself from going mad while you're in prison?
No, I wrote three prison diaries when I was in prison, which kept me from madness, because it's the insanity of not having anything to do. And I wrote 500,000 words in the first year. But plotting is it's a God-given gift, I would say. Storytelling and plotting are a God-given gift. But you can get very complicated, because here is this girl escaping from the tower in 9/11. She gets to Britain, where she's chasing the picture. He discovers she's in Britain. He moves this gymnast, this killer, against her to make sure she doesn't get to the picture. And it begins to get more and more complicated. And in the end, of course, you've got to make it all tie up. And that's the fun.
And this is all involved with art. You have a collection of your own, don't you?
Well, you and I have known over the years our love of art. You have as much greater knowledge than I do, but as much as
but
a love of art.
Not as good a collection.
A love of art that I do. I've been collecting now for nearly 40 years. I paid $30 for my first picture, and I've now got 200 or 300 pictures, and yes, it's a great thrill for me. It's a drug. I was yesterday in the Frick, the day before in the Modern, and if I could stay on the air, because my publishers will get cross for wasting the time, what a magnificent job you have done at the Modern Art Gallery. I came away from
The new buildings, yeah.
What an impressive gallery that is.
Although, as long as we're doing it, I also want to plug the incredible Goya's last works
at the Frick.
Show at the Frick.
Yes.
Just amazing.
In
this case, as you said, we say Van Gogh here, the Dutch say Van Gogh, and you say Van Gogh. Anyway, whatever it is, his self-portrait with a bandaged ear is at the heart of your story, and there's a photo of you in front of that painting in the back of the book, and it's interesting that you also are just showing one ear in this photo.
I think that was done quite purposely. This is the picture that she's chasing. This is a Van Gogh, as we call it, self-portrait with bandaged ear, of which there are two, Leonard. One is in the courtyard, and the world can see. That's the one I'm standing in front of. One is in a private collection, of course. So I have to base my story, the stealing of the one, in the private collection. I think it's an amazing picture. Of course, I was interested when we went to the Modern how the two Van Gogh pictures, the Starry Night and the one next to it, had the biggest crowd around them. Some amazing Picassos, but Van Gogh drew the biggest crowd. And I said to my son as I walked out, I think, you know, by accident, I picked the right artist at the right time. He is fascinating people still.
Well, he seems to have people connect with him, perhaps because of the story, perhaps because the paintings are so effective. In the novel, the authenticity of his painting is questioned because the artist had portrayed himself with his right ear bandaged,
yes.
And we know that he cut off his left ear.
People like you know, not everybody knows. One of the fascinating things in the research, of course, and it plays its own part in the book, that you're quite right, the wrong ear is bandaged, and he removed the other ear. And it's the mystery of how that happened. Don't tell them, Leonard.
No, I won't. But did you worry about putting 9/11 in as a plot device?
Yes,
Some people might consider that.
Yes, I did.
And have you gotten any feedback on that?
The book went to number one in Australia, selling 80,000 copies, which I've never done before. It's come in England in the first week. But you're quite right. We're discussing New York. So when I sent the book to the publishers, I thought they're going to ring back and say, we love the book, but we're worried about 9/11. So what I did was I cut that scene where she's on the 82nd floor, she's working her way down, the tower collapses, she somehow gets out. The whole of that, I thought, they're going to be offended by this. And they rang back and said, we love the book, but could we have more 9/11? And this was the New York publisher. So I said, well, I've written originally 32 pages on 9/11. Do you want the whole lot? Yes, please, they said. You've hit that weird moment by accident, Jeffrey, where we can handle it when it's done with dignity as history. And you've handled it so courteously and so fairly that we can handle that. And maybe we couldn't have even handled it a year ago, which was a fascinating point.
My guest is Jeffrey Archer, and his latest novel is called False Impression. It's published by St. Martin's Press. Why was it published in Australia first? I understand from speaking to Australian writers that there are certain copyright problems, but that they seem to be only when the writer is Australian.
No, this was, and I'm certainly not Australian, as you can probably tell, but the truth was that they begged it to come out at Christmas because they have two things at Christmas. They have their summer at Christmas. So when they sell a big book, if you sell it, it's not only a Christmas present, but you've got your beach people as well. I would never sell, well, so far 89,000 copies in hardback in Australia. I'd never do that, funnily enough, in August, September. The key time is November, December, January. And they begged me. They rang up the publishers and said, look, we know he's coming out in America in March. We know it's a very big build-up for America, and they're doing a terrific promotion job on it. But we desperately want it. So they almost got an early copy.
Because this is a summer book in Australia.
Yeah, very much a beach book.
And then I'm sure everyone knew this would be a bestseller in England. But did you fear at all what the critics would do to you?
No, because they had, they'd said, I mean, the Prison Diaries, they compared me to Dostoevsky, George Bernard Shaw, Dickens, and Pepys. So I came away thinking, well, they obviously feel I can write. So, but I was worried in this one sense, and I came out thinking this is the first novel since being released. I've got to put everything into it. I spent more time on it. I spent more time on the research. I've never worked harder on a book. So when it came in at number one in Australia and first week at number two, and I just heard half an hour ago, after 5 days in America, it's number eight. So the public, as always, Leonard, as you well know, it's the public who make the decision.
You said that you did a lot of research. Did you go to Bucharest?
No, I went to Bucharest as a young man very many years ago. But I know Tokyo, of course I don't know Tokyo. London I know very well. New York I know very well. Tokyo I know very well because of going over there on many book occasions. Bucharest I don't know well, no.
I imagine most of your former fellow prison inmates won't be reading this because you said the majority of them are illiterate.
60% literally can't read and write, and 80% not very good. So you're quite right. Getting read by that particular group will not be high. It was the thing that probably most shocked me was that the prison service was not doing a lot about people who couldn't read and write. And I suggested that instead of paying them to peel potatoes and clean floors, it might be wise to pay them to learn to read and write so that when they left prison, they would come out able to read and write rather than just go back to exactly what they were doing before.
And is that likely?
Well, I was very pleased to hear the other day that because I put this in Prison Diary 3, I was very pleased to get a short letter from a prisoner in saying you've won the battle in this prison. We're all paid exactly the same now.
Before your conviction, you were active, obviously, in British politics, and we've talked about that on your past visits. There was talk about stripping you of your title. Have you been stripped?
No, I have not.
Are you still a member of the House of Lords?
Yes,
then?
I am.
And you were suspended from the Conservative Party for 5 years. That has elapsed. So
yes,
does that mean
I'm,
you can go back into politics?
I am
now?
Back in. I'm in my local constituency, which is Cambridge, and in my London constituency, which is Lambeth. But the truth is that I'm putting everything into writing at the moment. My energy, my enthusiasm has gone into False Impression, and it will go into continuing writing.
The London.
I'm a bit long in the tooth, you know, to be doing much politics at the moment.
Well, one of our likely presidential candidates in this country is in his 70s already.
Who is that?
John McCain.
Well, actually, to be fair, I withdraw what I've just said, because I think Mr. McCain is a very impressive man, and I think will make a very serious candidate. We heard him in London quite recently, and we were very impressed by him.
This novel reads almost like a screenplay. Has anyone in Hollywood expressed any interest in this?
I can say with tongue-in-cheek, because so these things happen all the time and you never know what to believe, Steven Spielberg's office in the form of Frank Marshall, who's the leading producer there, rang about 2 weeks ago and is in discussion with my agent, but others have been in touch as well. You're quite right. Since Liz Smith, the New York columnist, well, she's a columnist for every paper you seem to open in this country, said that it was move over the Da Vinci Code, this was the new bestseller, and what a film it would make. The phone has been buzzing, yeah.
But you didn't call it the Van Gogh Code.
No, I avoided that. Now, that's a very interesting comment. We were worried that it might get muddled in that way, because I'd thought of this theme a long time ago, and I thought the title False Impression would leave no one in any doubt that I wasn't going down that road, because there are no codes, there are no secrets. It's simply whether this girl can rescue this Van Gogh worth $100 million, or whether Felix Fenston, the man who lives in Fenston, the man who is here in New York, can get to it first.
Although Fenston isn't his real name, but that's part of the fun of reading this kind of book. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. Jeffrey Archer, who's written any number of number one New York Times bestsellers and now has another one on his hands. Not yet number one, but it's only
yet,
the first week.
But you're helping it.
It's called False Impression, and it is published by St. Martin's Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me again. It's good to see you.
This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820 and WNYC.org, the place for news and talk all day, classical music all night.